Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's a special year-end edition of the Brian Lehrer Show. You are the only guests today. We don't need no Pauls and pundits. Our next call-in, if you are an immigrant from anywhere, what's the biggest story of the year from your country of origin? If you are an immigrant from anywhere, what's the biggest story of the year from your country of origin? Call in right now with that. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-WNYC. 9692, or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You know, the news media in this country gets so focused on America, 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 that we miss much of what's happening in the whole wide world. A little less so this year because of the Arab Spring and the European debt crisis. But still, we are an inward-looking country for the most part, for reasons of geography and other. But one of the most incredible things about living in New York is that people from all over the whole wide world do live here, and we try never to forget that on this program. So if you are an immigrant from anywhere, what's the biggest story of the year from your country of origin? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I'd love to hear from anyone from any Arab country, for example. Give us your own version of how you see the changes in the Middle East this year and the headline as you see it. Do you like the term Arab Spring? The Lebanese journalist Rami Khoury told me the other day that he doesn't like Arab Spring because it sounds too light to him. Arab Spring, look at the pretty leaves, la-di-da. Irish Spring is a soap. Arab Spring is maybe the most profound people's movement for freedom and dignity and self-determination in at least 20 years. And they don't use the term Arab Spring in the Arab press, I'm told. So, Arab listeners, do you like the term Arab Spring, or do you care one way or the other? 212-433-WNYC. But more importantly, if you're an immigrant from anywhere, what is the top story of 2011 from your country of origin? What if you're from Latin America? I'll give you one example here. What's the top story in the DR, in Mexico, in Brazil? Our listeners who are not from there mostly have no idea. So if you are Latin American, call us up and inform the rest of us. For example, I saw this on the Bloomberg Business News website this morning. Latin American nations won 12 credit rating or outlook upgrades this year, they reported, as Panama's $13 billion infrastructure investment plan boosted growth. Government spending increased the credit rate. Well, never mind that. That's the politics. Colombia pledged to cut its budget gap in half, going the other direction. And Uruguay boosted foreign reserves 27% in a year. So they say shrinking debt ratios and higher ratings make the region's bonds less susceptible to a slowing global economy. So how about that? We hear about our credit downgrade and Europe's historic debt issues, Italy's scary 7% bond sale even today. But meanwhile, who hears about the credit rating upgrades in Panama, Colombia, and Uruguay? So there are two examples. Arabs don't use Arab Spring. Credit ratings are rising south of the border. Immigrants from anywhere, you fill in the rest. Call us with the top story of 2011 from your country of origin, and we'll take your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's a special year-end edition of the Brian Lehrer Show. You are the only guests today. We don't need no Pauls and pundits. Our next call-in, if you are an immigrant from anywhere, what's the biggest story of the year from your country of origin? And we'll start with Paul in Nassau County. Paul, Happy New Year. Thanks so much for calling in.
Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, and Happy New Year to you, Brian, and all your listeners worldwide.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
And all of the above to you. So where are you from, and what do you think is the top story from there?
I'm Nigerian, and the top story has been a phenomenon known as Boko Haram. It's an Islamist extremist group that has killed a lot of people, engaged in public mayhem or carnage, They attacked the National Police Headquarters in Abuja. They also attacked on National Day celebration October 1st. They also attacked the United Nations headquarters in Nigeria, also in Abuja. And on Christmas Day, this last Christmas Day, about 50 persons were killed when the same Boko Haram attacked several churches in Abuja, in Jos, and across the northern part of Nigeria. So it has caused a state of insecurity. As a matter of fact, the United States government a couple of days ago pledged to support Nigeria with resources, with ideas, with law enforcement, in effort to tackle the Islamic extremists.
Yes, and I think there was a double-edged sword about the Christmas Day attacks. They were so outrageous and such obvious, such an obvious hate attack, bombing churches on Christmas Day, that it could have been much bigger news in this country than it actually was. But because it was Christmas Day, most people were not paying attention to the news.
Exactly right. And that's why, Brian, that I and many Nigerians, many of your listeners, appreciate your program. It gives opportunity to people to speak or address issues and news items, for instance, such as we're talking about, that are ignored or are not featured in the so-called mainstream press.
Paul,
apart from the New York Times, I'm not aware of any other coverage that occurred here.
Thank you so much for those kind words, and keep calling us in 2012.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank
and
you.
Hassan in Mill Basin, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, Brian. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Happy New Year. Where are you from originally, and what do you think is the top story?
I'm originally from Morocco.
Uh-huh.
And the top story is we have changes also that have swept through Morocco, except they did not take the king out because they changed the constitution and they elected a new government now.
Right. So along the lines of the changes that we've been hearing from elsewhere in North Africa as part of the Arab Spring, Egypt, Tunisia, Morocco also had this constitutional change. But not in the same kind of revolutionary way, perhaps, as in the other countries. I also heard that Moroccans elected an Islamist-leaning government, and so that has now happened in Egypt and Tunisia and Morocco this year. Is that accurate?
Yes, it's true. And the government now, led by the Islamist, party, they have to work in alliance with other parties, so they're not going to be the ones running the government. But I'm hoping that they can do something for the people like the king is trying to do right now.
Hassan, thank you very much, and happy
You're
New
welcome.
Year again
thank
to you.
You.
We'll be following Morocco definitely in 2012. And Leigh in Connecticut, you're on WNYC. Leigh, thanks a lot for calling in.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
And happy New Year. So where are you from originally, and what do you think is the top headline from there?
I'm originally from China, and it's a close one for me, but I think the top story this year has to be the uprising in the village of Wukan in Guangdong province.
And just a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Tell us about it. What do you think was significant there?
In some ways, it's an unprecedented instance of civil unrest in the communist China. The villagers essentially kicked out all of the Communist Party officials as well as the police and essentially barricaded themselves inside their village and demanded that their grievances be redressed. And I think the most significant part is that it seems like the party officials have actually started to work with them and initiate dialogue with the village, which is, I think, somewhat unheard of in communist China.
Do you think this is the beginning of the end of the kind of government that China has, that it's sort of the quote-unquote Arab Spring rolling all the way to toward Beijing through Wuhan, or is that overstating it?
I think that it probably isn't enough to sort of push the Chinese government towards reform. However, it is something that I think is a worrying development for the party officials across the country.
Leigh, thanks a lot. Happy New Year to you. Call us again
Thank
in 2012.
You. You too.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we're taking calls from immigrants from everywhere on the top news story from your country of origin in 2012 as people finish up, as Lei just did. Their lines open up. The rest are full. 212-433-9692 for Lei's open line now. And Ahmed in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ahmed.
Good morning, Mr. Brian. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about
you? Happy New Year, man.
Same to you, man. And
love your show.
Thank you. Where are you from, and what do you think the top story is?
I'm from Sudan. And we got two countries in my country.
That is big news, isn't it?
Do you have bigger than that?
You don't have bigger than a whole new country. Not very often. So which half are you from?
I'm from the north now.
And so is this good news as far as you're concerned?
As long as the people of the South are happy, I'm happy with that.
Do you think this is going to help bring peace to a country that's had so much civil war?
We're trying now. Hopefully it works.
Hopefully it works. Big news. Yeah. A creation of a brand new country doesn't happen every day, that's for sure. So that, very glad you called in with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year, my man.
Happy New Year to you. Miguel in Lefferts Gardens. You're on WNYC. Hello, Miguel.
Hi, Brian. How's it going?
Good. So what country are you from? What's the big story?
I'm from Spain. And I guess the obvious story could be the 15th of May movement, which was kind of a precursor to the Occupy Wall Street movement. I always try to remind people that it started to happen in other places before it happened here.
Did the 15th of May movement accomplish anything in particular that you can put your finger on?
Well, that's an interesting question because, I mean, the only thing that I was going to mention is that the general elections happened in Spain pretty recently, and the Conservative Party just, you know, completely took over everything from the presidency to Congress and Senate. And in a way, it seems like the 15th of May movement might have discouraged some younger people, meaning, you know, I know some of my friends there said, you know, I don't care about politics anymore. These people don't represent us. That's one of the slogans, actually. They don't represent us, that the 15th of May movement has. So I think a lot of people stayed away from the polls, and perhaps that allowed this huge victory of the Conservative Party.
That's really interesting, and I wonder if it portends negatively for the Democrats in this country for next year, because one of the things about the Occupy movement is that they have stayed away from electoral politics and don't want to just be a branch of the Democratic Party because they're too angry at the Democrats, you know, for any number of things. But if the same pattern as happened in Spain through that stay away from electoral politics attitude takes place here, well, maybe we'll elect a conservative government too.
I think that the thinking here is that it might happen here as well. But I think the people who make this decision of staying away from the poll, they're thinking, I'm not looking at this election. I'm looking at the future. I want to send a clear message that if they don't change their ways, we will not vote for them. So perhaps in the short term, it means a victory for the Conservative Party. In the long term, I think that the Socialist Party in Spain, at least, should have gotten the message.
See that they need the real progressives in their coalition, and they can't ignore them.
That's right.
Miguel, thank you very much. Happy New Year. Maria in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Brian.
Happy New Year to you.
Manigong bagong taon. That's Happy New Year in our language.
Which is Filipino?
Yes, Philippines.
That is great. So what's the news from the Philippines this year?
Well, I've been in this country for about 23 years, and I've been a Hoboken resident for about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's about that boxer, Manny Pacquiao.
You know, I don't know this story or that man.
Well, he's supposed to fight against Floyd Mayweather.
Okay.
And I just Googled his name, and I just found out today that the highly anticipated fight between him and Mayweather is postponed again because Mayweather, unfortunately, was sentenced to 90 days in jail.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, that's just a short bit. But what I found interesting is he's actually in local politics now over there.
Because
he did mention 2 or 3 years ago he wanted to get into politics. A lot of people are encouraging him to actually run for president over there.
So this boxer is a big, big famous athlete in the Philippines.
Oh,
and now
yes.
He's entering.
I actually found out about him from the Time magazine.
That's
the very first time I found out about this Filipino boxer.
So what's his big issue, or what do you think is a big issue in Filipino politics that other people should know about?
Well, I think his greatest appeal is he's the common man. I mean, he came from, as far as I know, he came from a poor family. He was really into boxing at a young age, and he was able to, you know, make a success out of that. And I think he wants to do the same thing with politics. And I think he just wants to represent most of the people there, which I think, I would think maybe 80% is actually living below the poverty line over there. So it's still a third world country, you know. But fortunately, we already have our own version of democracy over there. So, I mean, good for him. Good luck for him.
Maria,
I just found it interesting mm-hmm. that as soon as I found out that he's already into local politics, I guess he's really serious when it comes to politics. And yeah. if he approaches politics as much as he approaches boxing, I think he'll be a great success. Who knows? Maybe he'll maybe 5 or 6 years from now, he'll be the president yes. of the Philippines yes. over there.
Well, we'll see. And our resident boxing fan here tells me that, in fact, he's considered the best boxer in the world and that Meriwether is really afraid of him. So, Maria, thank
that's
you.
That's good to know.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year. And Hani in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Hani.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. Happy New Year.
Thanks. Happy New Year to you, too. Well, I actually wanted to address your question about the Arab Spring and
yes.
why that term does not hasn't really caught on.
Can you tell us where you're from first?
I'm Egyptian.
Uh-huh.
Most of my family is in Egypt, and I almost never hear any of them use the term Arab Spring. And I think there's two very important reasons for that. First of all, the term itself is an analogy to historical events which took place in the former Czechoslovakia back in 1968, which are highly irrelevant to the current situation and which people don't see very much of an analog
yes,
to.
Yes, the Prague Spring.
The Prague Spring, which you might remember was a movement of democratic reforms that was quickly quashed by the Soviet bloc. So, you know, we're talking about a different political context where an outside power is controlling all the strings of government and then cracks down on it brutally. Not only is it a bad example, it's also, you know, an example of an abject failure to succeed in democratic reforms. But the bigger, more important issue, and I think this is very important to understanding why perhaps some Arab audiences in the West in particular react very negatively to the term, is that the first time we hear the term Arab Spring is not in 2011. It's in 2005 at the peak of the Bush administration's quote-unquote freedom agenda, where we start to see some electoral and democratic movements that seem to justify one of the prevailing justifications for going to war in Iraq. We see a first round of relatively nonviolent Iraqi elections. We see a very, very big democratic movement in Lebanon that pushes Syrian influence out of the country. We start to see movements in Egypt towards opening up the political process there. We see free and fair elections in the Palestinian territories, which we now see as being somewhat disastrous. But it has very neoconservative connotations, and the people who are aware of that don't want to be reminded of that.
Right,
but
and you're one of the few one of the few Egyptians I've spoken to who is willing to give any credit at all to the Bush, you know, democracy underpinnings or at least rationale for going into Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that a democracy fledgling as it is was launched at the point of an American gun, for giving that any credit for the contagion that Bush always hoped that would launch.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but you
I
think
remember,
it's real.
I mean, there's still some debate about that because a very real argument could be made that the administration at that time, in particular Secretary Rice, made much more strong, much more strident appeals to democratic reform in Egypt than even President Obama has done up till now. But at the same time, it was the linkage that was made, and you tended to see this more among Western proponents of intervention in Iraq. This idea that Iraq would be a model democracy
yes.
for the Arab world, which at the rate it's going is hopefully not going to be the case. But I also remember speaking to people who said that the democratic movement in Ukraine at the time
mm-hmm.
must have been inspired by the Iraqi elections.
Hani, thank you very much for your call. I really appreciate it. Your analysis. By the way, correction, I said Meriwether. It is, of course, Mayweather, the boxer. And Paul in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Hello. Happy New Year. I'm from Jamaica, and the biggest news from this year in Jamaica, I would say, is the election that's taking place today in Jamaica. And why it's big news is because in one political party, the People's National Party of a woman that's running. And if she wins, she'll be the first woman prime minister of Jamaica. And in the other party, the Jamaican Labor Party, you have a 39-year-old who is running. And if he wins, he'll be the youngest prime minister of Jamaica.
And what's the big issue in Jamaica right now, if this is Election Day?
What's the big issue?
Mm-hmm.
I would say the big issue is, I guess, like what's facing most countries, the economy and jobs. And, well, you know, tourism is a big industry for Jamaica, and education, and, you know, crimes in certain areas. But the crime is kind of getting under control. And like I said, it's going to be a tough election. It's going to be a close election. It's kind of like too close to call.
And it sounds like it's going to be a historic election, considering who the candidates are, regardless of the outcome.
Right, because of the like one will be the youngest, and one, if the other one wins, he'll be the first woman prime minister of Jamaica.
Both.
And the gentleman that's running, the 39, he's 39 years old. Actually, he's the prime minister right now because the last prime minister stepped down like 2 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And he called election, the gentleman that's in right now, he called elections for today. And that's the big news in Jamaica.
Paul, thank you very, very much. That's a great call. And I didn't even know about an election taking place right in our hemisphere. And with our big Jamaican population in the New York area, we should try to get that president-elect on the show, whoever it is, or at least follow up with a dedicated segment to the Jamaican election results early in the new year. So, Paul, thank you very much for that call, and thanks to all of you immigrants from everywhere with the biggest story of the year from your country of origin. As many of you know, we do our immigrants from everywhere call-ins on many questions throughout the year, and of course, we will continue to do that in 2012. So thank you for continuing to lend your voice to this show.